So it is my privilege to introduce our speaker, Marie Osborne. She is a local mom of three, blogger and speaker. She speaks on tackling mom life with hope and humor as we navigate this messy life together. Marie.
I just need to give a shout out to all the moms of twins because I saw a few of them coming in and I'm so happy to see you. We're okay. We're going to be okay. I have a six-year-old son and identical twin four-year-old girls, and I've hit the rad part, guys, and I'm not being sarcastic. There's going to be other sarcasm, but this part is, yeah. Everybody goes to the bathroom by themselves. Everybody walks into the car and buckles themselves in very slowly, but it happens. They all just kind of play together because they're all the same age. It's very nice. I have other friends that have three kids or more, and they're like, oh my gosh, you have twins. Like, no, if you have three different age children, you do a kind of math in your head that I don't understand, because like none of my kids take naps anymore. Everyone is on it's like I do one math problem. Everyone is on the same schedule. You all eat the same thing. It's like a factory at my house. Just like everyone, we're all doing the same thing. All of you that have three different ages, four different ages, five different ages, that's a very complicated word problem. Because it's like, if what child A wakes up at this time, and child B naps at that time, and child C only eats Cheetos, and child, it's, no, you have too many things. So just because you hear the word twins, I don't, no, my math is very simple. I am here to talk to you today about overwhelm, which everyone in this room is like, yes. This is our season in life where we get overwhelmed because there are tiny people in our lives that we cannot control, that just randomly continue to get a cold or a flu during cold and flu season, no matter what we do. This is the season where I feel like this time of year, I'm like, I got it. And then some kid's like, and I'm like, no, because that's like, then everybody's going to get it. It's like this whole cycle. Now I see all of the dominoes falling. My life is going to fall apart. I am talking to you about overwhelm because, yes, because we all struggle with it. But I'm talking to you about overwhelm because I think there are some misconceptions. I think that we sort of throw it out there kind of like, I'm stressed out. We just say we're overwhelmed, and we don't really know how to dig into it. So let me tell you about a time that I was overwhelmed recently and how I reacted. I put myself in a timeout. It was super mature. I flipped out. I was done with all of the things, all of them. Three small things in particular named William, Katie, and Emma. I was done with them. I was done with all of the things leading up to those three things and the things around them. And I put myself in my room. No joke. I was like, put myself in my room, and I closed the door and I sat in my bed and I put my covers over me. And my kids were like very confused about what was happening. And so they all kind of came in, like this weird little herd of people. And they're like, what's happening, Mom? And I was like, Mom is in a timeout. You are not in trouble. You are not in a timeout. You go play in your rooms. Go play in the playroom. Don't play in the kitchen. But I am in a timeout. Mom is in a timeout. And I think they were freaked out by like the third person situation. But I was like, Mom is in a timeout. Why? She's having a bad attitude. It's a bad attitude. And you know what that means. That means timeout. I am in a timeout. And they're like, sort of eke their way out of the room. Like, what? I don't understand what's happening, but I'm just going to, she said go play, so we're just going to go. And I'm texting my husband furiously, like in my bed with tears. I'm done. I might sell some people. I don't know what's happening. I'm in my bed with the covers over me. This is not a happy situation. I don't know if you have ever gotten there, but there is some place in that situation that you have gotten yourself where you are done. and you are laying in bed, you are in your pantry eating Halloween candy. You are binge watching Netflix in the bathroom on your phone. You are, I don't know where you are, but you have hidden yourself away and you are retreating because you are done. And I want to dig into some biblical examples of that today. One, specifically Elijah from the Bible. He is in, you can read his story in 1 Kings. And I want to start in the part of the story where he is done. He is done. Elijah is completely done. We find him at this part of the story. He is afraid. It says in 1 Kings 19:3, Elijah was afraid and fled for his life. He went to Beersheba, a town in Judah. He left his servant there, and then he went alone into the wilderness, traveling all day. He sat down under a solitary broom tree and prayed that he might die. I have had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors who have already gone. I am done. I was living the Elijah life under my covers. I am done. I'm just going to, you kids, peace be with you. Your father is handsome. Maybe he will find someone else. I am under the covers. I am done. That is where we end up when we are overwhelmed. But what you know is that that's not the whole story, right? That's not the whole story. There are things that lead up to that. So my story of what led up to that was the Thursday before. This is Monday afternoon. I'm under the covers. Thursday before, I was looking forward to having a night out with one of my girlfriends who's here from the Czech Republic, and I see once every couple of years. And I was getting myself all dressed up. And I put makeup on like I have my own life. And my husband calls me, and he's supposed to be almost to the house to watch the children so I can go live my own life. And he calls me and says, I just twisted my ankle so bad, I might have to go to urgent care, or somebody, you might have to come pick me up, like I might have broken my foot. Wah, wah. This is a bad situation. So I had to cancel with my girlfriend. I had to try and reschedule with her. I had to get my husband. He comes into the house. I'm like making sure his foot is attached still. It was. And so that started this whole series of things, because the next morning I was supposed to go speak somewhere just like I am today. So now I didn't have my husband to help me get the kids ready. I had to wake up extra early, get everybody ready, make sure that he had something to sustain himself because he couldn't walk up and down the stairs. So I have an extra person to take care of. I'm getting myself all ready. I drive my son to school because I'm going to drive him to school and drop the twins off at somebody else's house, and my son doesn't have school that day. I did not know until I pulled up to the school. There was no school that day. So now I have to regroup. Whew, we're pulling it together. I call my girlfriend. She says, sure, I'll take an extra kid. That's fine. So I drop all three of them off, and I pull myself together, and I drive to do my speaking engagement. Then I come home, and I have to rally everybody and take care of all of the things. Plus, I had scheduled a Christmas family photo shoot for Saturday morning that I still had to organize my family for. But also, because I'm a stupid overachiever, I decided what I was going to do is also take pictures of all of our Halloween costumes, because I wanted to dress my kids up like characters from The Shining. Because you know, if you have seen the movie or if you're at all familiar with it, you have the dad, Jack Nicholson, you have the mom, Shelley Duvall, you have the son, and then you have the creepy twins, which I have. So I needed this to happen. So it's Friday, and I'm pulling together Christmas clothes, and I'm sewing Halloween costumes, and I'm feeding all of the people and putting them to bed. And then it's Saturday, I'm waking everybody up, and we're going to take cute pictures, and everybody is paying attention. And I have gathered props from all of my friends. I had driven to someone's house and got a bat, and someone else's house and got an axe, and someone else's house, and because these are normal things that my friends expect me to ask them if I can borrow. So now Saturday morning has arrived and we're taking all of the pictures, and this has all thrown off my whole Saturday groove. So I have to like reschedule, right? Because that's when I go grocery shopping and I do all the laundry and so everything is behind. There, nobody has any underwear. I might just go to Target and buy us all new clothes because I don't know what's going to happen. So the whole weekend is a frenzy of me washing and cleaning and putting things away. And Sunday, I see the light at the end of the tunnel is Monday afternoon. Because Sunday, we need to go to church because we love Jesus. And then I need to make brownies and gather some food together because Monday morning, my girls and I are going to a museum because they are turning 4 and we are taking their friends and we need brownies to celebrate their birthday. So I'm getting all of the 4-year-old presents things and the food, and we're ready for Monday morning, and I gather everybody and we go to the museum and they have a wonderful time and they get super, super dirty. So I take them home and I am in the home stretch, my friends. Since Thursday, I am in the home stretch. I'm just going to bathe my children and they're going to go to their rooms to rest, and I don't know what I'm going to do. It's noon and now I have nothing else to do, and my husband is finally walking on his own and has taken himself to work. So I am feeling the light. It is noon when everyone is in their rooms. I will breathe a breath and I tell my children it's time to get out of the bath. My girls, I have been watching. My son was in the other bathtub. And I say, okay, girls, we need to get out. And I go to the other bathroom to tell my son that it's time to get out of the bathtub. And I hear water running downstairs. That's not supposed to happen. There's no one down there. So I go downstairs, and there is water coming out of the ceiling vent onto my floor in my living room. And so I flip out, because this was supposed to be my time. And so I'm throwing towels down, and I grab my naked children, and I throw them in their rooms, and I close the door, and I don't know what they think. And I call my husband, and he's like, hey, babe, I'm going into a meeting. Is this an emergency? Yes! Come home. There is water coming from the ceiling. And I'm mopping everything up, and then I go to drain the tub, and for some reason it stops coming out of that vent and starts coming out of the other vent. And so I'm mopping that whole thing up, and by the time my husband comes home, I have retreated. This is where I have retreated, into my room. I am under the covers, everything is cleaned up, and I am done. I am going to sell my children and my home, and I'm gonna live in a cave, because there's no leaks in caves. And there's none of these requirements. That is where we get to there. It's a number of things that lead us there. We don't one day show up under the covers for no reason. And Elijah did not show up in the desert for no reason. He had a lot of reasons too. Elijah was living in a time under a king named Ahab that the Bible says Ahab was the son of Omri and did evil in the eyes of the Lord, more evil in the eyes of the Lord than any of those before him. So he's living under the most evil king that anyone has ever heard of. That's awesome. Then Ahab marries this horrible woman, Jezebel. Which, if you're not familiar with the Bible, you're probably familiar with that name. And I don't know that anyone here is named Jezebel because of her, in case you were wondering. She's horrible. She begins to kill off the prophets of God. And so now, not only is he living under an evil king, but his life is in danger because of the king's wife. And then the first thing that we see that God calls him to do under an evil king, under a woman who wants to kill all the prophets of God, is God calls Elijah to go to Ahab and say, as the Lord God of Israel lives, whom I serve, there will be no dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word. So he's supposed to go to him and basically say, I'm going to cause a huge drought in your country. And no rain's going to come back until I say so, just so you know. I know you're killing all of my friends, but God has told me that there's not going to be any rain. And what I didn't realize till I started digging into this is that, I thought that was a pretty big deal. But then I realized that also meant that Elijah was going to have to live through a drought. So now Elijah is living through a time where he has a very difficult time finding food. He has to listen specifically to God where God's going to send him to find food. So now, not only is Elijah living under an evil king with a woman that wants to kill him, then there's no, you know, food in the land. Everyone's blaming him for it. He has to follow God around until God tells him where to go eat. You're going to go to this part of the land and ravens are going to bring you food and water. That dries up, God. I don't know what I'm supposed to do now. Now you're going to go to this widow woman, and she is going to feed you. Well, she doesn't have any food. So God does a miracle in her life to feed Elijah. So he has one thing after another where his life is extremely difficult. And finally, after 3 years of famine, God says, go to Ahab again. That is stressful to me because you think he was popular with Ahab at this point? There's a drought in the land. All of their animals are dying, and God is telling him to go to Ahab. So he goes to Ahab, and he says to him, I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. Get two bulls for us. Let Baal's prophets choose one of the bulls for themselves and let them cut it into pieces and put it on wood, but not set fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and put it on wood, but not set fire to it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord, and the God who answers by fire, he is God. So he watches. This is one of my favorite parts of the Bible, guys, because a prophet of the Bible, like, talks smack to some people. If you have not read this, go and read it, especially if you have like some sarcasm bones in your body. It is so fun because he watches these 450 prophets of Baal, and they get together their altar and they cut up the pieces and they put it all down and they're like, oh, my fake God, bring down fire. And Elijah says, and they've been doing it for half the day from morning till noon. And at noon, Elijah begins to taunt them. Shout louder, he said. Surely he's a god. Perhaps he is deep in thought or busy or traveling. Maybe he is asleep and must be awake. That is so rad. I love that God, that a prophet of God is like, hey, you should dance some more. Maybe you could convince your fake god to do some stuff. And no fire comes down. But then Elijah, who again is standing by himself, Jezebel has killed off all of the other prophets. There's 100 in hiding. He has told the people of Israel. He goes before them and he says, how long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. If Baal is God, follow him. And the people of Israel say nothing. Elijah is standing alone on this mountain. He has been hungry. He has been following God. He has had a target on his back. He's been chasing, you know, running away from death threats. And now he's standing alone with 450 prophets. And he sets up his altar and he cuts up the pieces of the bull. And he has them dig out a trench and he has them pour water on the altar. Fill four large jars with water and pour it on the offering on the wood. Do it again, he says. And they did it again. Do it a third time. And they did it a third time. And the water runs down around the altar and even fills the trench. So this is not like fire is going to easily ignite this sacrifice. And then he calls on our God. And God brings down fire. A miracle that no one can deny. The fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood and the stones and the soil, and licked up the water of the trench. And when all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, the Lord, he is God, the Lord, he is God. So this all has happened to Elijah. Why is he in the middle of the desert wanting to die? And I think we all sort of feel like this a little bit when we're dealing with difficult things in motherhood. I should feel so blessed. I have these wonderful children. I should feel so blessed. Why am I overwhelmed? Why am I so stressed out by all of this? my twins just turned 4. We had a birthday. It was so fun. My family has a great sense of humor. We took ridiculous pictures. Like, we made it happen. But it's all overwhelming because there's always one last straw. Ahab goes and tells Jezebel everything that Elijah did, and Jezebel again threatens his life. And that was it. That was the last thing Elijah needed. I think he had a light at the end of the tunnel in his mind where all of this difficulty was going to stop. I'm going to stand up and something great is going to happen for the Lord. He's going to do some miracle, and all of these years of drought and all of these years of me having a feeling like I was going to be killed by Jezebel and Ahab, all of these years of me being alone in my faith, they're going to end now. And yet Jezebel still wants to kill him. And he's like, whoop, never mind. So he goes to the desert. That is when he goes. We need to realize that overwhelm is not just one thing. You have some notes there if you'd like to take notes. Overwhelm is not just one thing. We often think it is the last thing that happened. I texted several of my girlfriends when I was under the covers in my house and said, there is a leak in my roof. My ceiling is leaking water into my living room. And everybody said, oh no, because that is terrible. But that is not the thing, the only thing that led to my overwhelm. It was the twisted ankle and the too many things on my schedule and the things not going as the way I planned and having all of these things that I needed to do. It's never just the one thing. It's never just that last thing. It wasn't just that Jezebel had threatened Elijah's life. It was that he had been struggling for years and he wanted it to stop. And it wasn't stopping. We have so many pressures on our lives. We wear so many hats. We define ourselves as so many things. A wife, a mom, a homemaker, daughter, sister, friend. Then don't even forget, you need to add to that that you have to pay bills, that you have to keep your car running, that it is cold and flu season, and everyone, my kids are homesick right now with my husband. That's fun. Then there's social media, which adds to stress and pressures. Now it is Christmas, and I have to buy a million presents and orchestrate all the family get-togethers. That's like a jigsaw puzzle. Does anybody else have that jigsaw puzzle coming up later this month? Like, I don't know if I can. Can you call her, my aunt, and see if she can come to the thing? And maybe, I don't know. Like, it's too many things to orchestrate. Overwhelm is defined as being given too much of a thing, being inundated. We have too many hats that we wear, too many jobs that we need to fill. It's being buried beneath a huge mass or drowning. It's being overcome by superior force or numbers. My kids all like to talk at the same time, all of them. I don't understand. It's a little bit my fault because I talk all the time. And my husband does not talk all the time. So when the car gets really loud and I'm like, what is happening? He's like, welcome to yourself. You had 3 of you. What did you think was going to happen? I don't know. Also, I was an only child, so I'm like, what is this? There's all this chatter. Like, I got to fill all the chatter. It was only my words. Everybody just listened to me. But my kids, there's 3 of them, and they all talk at the same time. And recently, it's probably not the nicest thing that I do, but I need to just one person talk to me at a time. So I do this thing where I just put my hand, like, right in their face, like, on their nose. I'm listening to brother. I'm listening to brother right now. And it startles them, like, whoop, like all of their words, like, swoop, like in their mouth. Because I think that when someone puts their hand flat on your nose, it makes you feel like, whoa, maybe, I don't know what that is. It's like it's an off button, maybe. So I have been known to both hands on both twins. Chip, what are you saying? What are you saying, William? Yes, thank you. Okay, no, okay, you, this one. Like, one at a time. They have superior numbers to me. There are three of them. They inundate me with their questions. There was one time my son in the car. He has so many questions, just one, and it's just him. And I was driving in the car, and I was stuck on a street with so much traffic. And it's like one of those streets near my house that I'm just like, oh, this street. This is where people just go to die. And I was stuck on the street, and I couldn't turn around and get out of it. There was nothing to do. And he's just so many questions and so many questions and so many questions. And I started to feel kind of panicky, like I'm going to be here forever, and this is how I'm going to die with answering so many questions. And so I said, I'm trying to be so nice, and I'm like, hi, babe, can we save some of those questions for Daddy? And he's such a sweetheart. He just starts to cry. And he's like, no, these are your questions. And so I was like, oh, I'm the worst. But also, I don't want to die here. So I was like, can we save, how about, I know you want to, my mom wants these questions so bad. Can you save them till we get home? Just store them up so that we have some questions for at home. And he starts to cry harder, and he says, no, these are car questions. These are car questions for you. This is what overwhelm is. When we are inundated with the people's questions, we are inundated with all of their words, and we are the only person that can handle it. It is too many things. And it is not just that thing that is in front of us, right? Because I have totally escaped to my pantry to eat Halloween candy because just the questions that happened at that moment. But I know that that's not just it. It's also because I know there are 7 loads of laundry, that later this week is pajama day, and it's like dress as your favorite character day. I'm like now my kid's personal assistant in first grade. Like, also, I have to, like, buy 7 gifts that my mom is giving to my kids because she doesn't know the exact toy that the person needs. So, like, this is a problem. Like, there's too many things in my head. It's not just that you're asking me, and I have actually, I'm going to admit, this is a sad time. I have actually lost it so much at one time that I was like, William, do you know what mom has to do today? I have to do all of the laundry, and I need to pack your lunch, and then I need to go online and shop for grandma. And he's just like, whoa. Like, when I'm telling him my to-do list, he doesn't need to know that. That's my own personal problem that I need to solve with a Twix in the pantry. But we need to get a handle on what all of the things are. So I'm going to read you a list. I've done some research on some psychology sites and sociological sites about some of the things that stack up for us that lead to our overwhelm. And I want to encourage you to sort of make a list for yourself, because here is the other thing. It is going to be different for all of us. It is going to be different for all of us. And I think that that's one of the insidious things about overwhelm, is that I will feel overwhelmed by my one kid's too many questions, and then I will see a friend that has 5 very inquisitive children, and she doesn't want to die. What? How? Why is she? I need to pull it together and not be overwhelmed by this. You know, we gauge what we're allowed to be overwhelmed by. And it's, we need to realize, because it's not just one thing, each of us has a different stack. And it's, we're not going to see all of the things on everybody's stacks. So here are some of the things that lead, that can stack up to us feeling overwhelmed. Relationship problems, whether they're marital problems, whether they're friendship issues, whether they are family issues. This is the time of year when this stuff starts to feel overwhelming, because there's some bombs that are going to drop on December 25th, my friends, and you're feeling it already. Some of you are like, I'm going to start to gird myself, put on some armor, and get ready to have to deal with this person and their commentary about life. Sometimes it's not even problems, it's lack of that relationship. A lack of friendship can add to feeling very isolated and overwhelmed. Current events Can we all just say everybody has a low-level simmering overwhelm because of all of the things that are happening in our world and our country? And we need to just recognize that all of us have upped it a little bit. Sometimes we have underlying physical or mental health conditions, either in your family or in yourself. If you have a child with a special need, if you have a family member with a special need, whether it's your parents or your husband, you have things, physical issues that people are dealing with long term. I have struggled with depression for over 10 years. And so I have continually have this thing simmering in the back of my mind when I do have bad days, when I'm under the covers because I'm overwhelmed. There's another level of fear that this is adding. This is the start of a spiral. This is going to be the start of a spiral that I can't get out of. Am I going to need to start going into intense therapy again? Am I going to need to change my medication? What's going to happen? What's going to be the aftermath for my family because of my struggle with depression? And I have friends with anxiety that deal with the same thing. When you have an underlying health issue, even if it's not flaring up at the moment, that adds to a simmering overwhelm. Career demands, job stress, deadlines, relationships in your career, whether it's yours or your husband's. A lot of us, especially if you're staying home and your husband is the one that is paying for a lot of things, his job stress bleeds over. My husband and I have had seasons of life where he has hated his job. Luckily, we are in a wonderful season where he loves his job. But we've had seasons where he has hated it, and it has been one of the most difficult times in my life, because the person that I love so much is not who he usually is, and I am powerless to do anything about it. Can we just talk about social pressures placed on women? Right? I mean, we're gonna laugh about it, but it's for real. It adds to a sense of overwhelm. Never gonna be thin enough or skin or tan enough or young enough. It's fading away. Every morning I wake up, it's like more overwhelmed because here it goes. More grays that I need to cover up, more pounds that I need to get rid of. And then after you have your baby and then you try and get it back, I'm gonna get my body back, because they tell you, they call it body back, and that is a weird phrase, because even if you do all of the things and you work out and you're super healthy and then it doesn't all go back in the same position. Nobody told me about that until I was like, oh, that's interesting. We have so many social pressures placed on us, some that are cultural, some that are within our own family. We live in the shadows of our mothers or of our mother-in-laws. We feel this need to fill a specific role as a woman, as a wife, as a mother, as a homemaker. And those are unique pressures that women feel that add to our overwhelm. Financial difficulties. I mean, I'm very thankful that we have the funds to buy Christmas presents and that we're going to be giving. Gift giving and gift receiving is like my love language. And I know not everybody understands that. It's like, whatever, you're greedy. I'm not. It is super fun for me. It is super fun for me to pick you out the perfect gift and watch you see that I know you. This is how well I know you. I've been paying attention to all of that random conversation thing that you said 3 months ago. I paid attention and I bought it for you. And then when you do the same thing for me, I feel so loved and known. But that also means that I have to buy it and pay for it. And then now we don't have as much money in the bank. There's a financial pressure that we have to deal with. It is not a cheap place to live that we live in, my friends, in Southern California. My husband and I had to move to another rental this summer, and we were going around looking, and it's expensive. Rental prices are expensive. Buying a house is expensive. My kids keep wanting to eat. And like every month I have to buy food and feed them. And then my daughter is now obsessed with ballet and my eyes are like a cartoon, like ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ching. Like, how long can you put that off? Like making your dreams come true. And then there's life transitions that add up to that also. If you have a baby, if you have two babies at one time, which is a surprise. If you buy a house, if you move to a new place. My husband and I have moved to new cities twice. We moved from here to Los Angeles, Los Angeles to Illinois, and Illinois back here. And every time it adds a sense of overwhelm. All of these life transitions add up to the things that stack up in our lives. If you have the death of a loved one, even if it's not a recent one, I have a girlfriend who lost her father-in-law this last year. And even though it's been a number of months, and it's actually almost a full year because it was at the beginning of 2017, this is the first holiday when he isn't with their family. I lost my father when I was 12. And I have to tell you that as my kids age, I still get a level of sadness and stress and overwhelm added to my life because they will never have that grandfather. They will never know him. And when they ask me questions about Grandpa Chris, that adds to it as well. When you have lost someone close to you, you have these waves of overwhelm that continue to ripple through your life. These last four are so unique to our lives, I feel like everybody's gonna say amen. Clutter. I know there are people in here who are praying to Jesus now, please let my mother or mother-in-law see the light and not give my kids all the toys with the 7,000 pieces to come into my home this year. Because you're already getting hives about it, I can tell. I have a girlfriend who only has two kids, and she's like, we don't even have that big of a family. And I did the math, and we're gonna get 20 new toys in my house. I can't have 20 new toys in my house. I'm like such a meanie. I'm just like, books, books. We're only getting books. Get them some clothes. I'm like trying to sell them stuff that makes my life easier. Socks, they love socks. I don't know. I mean, it's crazy. There's so many little pieces of things. And one of my daughters loves it. She loves to have all the things. My other daughter, I don't know. She wants to never wear any clothes. And like, she's just like this wild and free person. But my other daughter will wake up in the morning and put on at one dress, usually two dresses, because she couldn't decide before she left her room. And then she comes downstairs and sees like the dress up in and is like, oh, can I also be a princess? I'm like, it is 1,000 degrees, but whatever. And so then she has a princess dress and a purse, and she wants all of the clutter on her. So she's like a walking, like, clutter machine that stresses me out. And then she wants to bring it everywhere. I need to bring my baby and my purse and my crown and my wand and my two dresses to go to Trader Joe's. And I'm like, no. I'm trying to get your sister to wear pants. Please don't bring more things. And she wants to keep all the crafts that she makes at church, and she wants to keep all, and like she finds a flower and wants me to keep it forever. And I'm just like, it's like they are like clutter machines. Like I'm just bringing it into my life. And then I feel so like it's too many things. She like grabs stuff out of the trash that I'm trying to rid my life with. Just like, you're like an octopus of clutter, just like bring it back to my life. The last three that we feel is insufficient time to complete our tasks or rest. Amen, said all of the women in this room. Sleep deprivation. Amen. My daughter's not feeling well. I was up with her for 2 hours last night, and then my husband was up with her for 2 hours last night. And right now, she is taking a nap on the couch. I would like to be taking a nap on the couch, but I cannot. But when you're four, that is acceptable. We struggle, and what's difficult for moms is that we feel like it's just part of motherhood, so it shouldn't add to our level of overwhelm. It adds to your overwhelm. There are some symptoms of motherhood that add to overwhelm, period. Having insufficient time, sleep deprivation, the last one, poor diet. How many of you have eaten some toddler's half-eaten apple and some crusts on a PB&J and like a gnawed animal cracker in the car for lunch? Because you were like, this is what I get. Everybody else's rejects. But I'm starving, so here we go. We don't have time to take care of ourselves and rest and eat properly. And this gives us a baseline of overwhelm. A pretty high baseline of overwhelm. And then we add on top of it all the other things on this list. Overwhelm is not just one thing, and we need to stop thinking it is. We need to stop telling ourselves, I'm gonna get the laundry under control, and then 2018 is gonna be the year of Marie. Right? We do that, like we focus on, like I do this so much where I focus on one problem. Do you know what? If we could get rid of all of the toys and the kids only play with two wooden sticks, my life would be 100% amazing. But clutter is not your only problem. Clutter is not your only problem. I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna say no to every single person. I'm not gonna have anything scheduled in my life. It's gonna be 100% free. And I'm gonna have no schedule worries. But then what happens is you still have laundry to do and your kids still need to eat and you still are sleep deprived and you still have had the death of a loved one or a move that you, there are still things that will overwhelm you. I'm not saying don't solve that problem, but it's not just the one thing. Overwhelm also impacts our emotions and actions. It impacts our emotions and actions. One of the emotional impacts that it has is extreme sadness, persistent anger, fear, anxiety, guilt. And again, that's different for everyone. I don't know what it is for you. I don't really struggle with anxiety, but I do get very sad. I get very hard on myself, and I get angry. I get very angry. When I am overwhelmed, I'm going to tell you the two times when I am super overwhelmed that my kids get the brunt of it. It is at dinner time. Rage. Dinner time rage disorder. I just named it. When Katie cannot eat any food. It is the slowest eating of the universe. Call the Guinness Book of World Records. She is the slowest eater. And I, one day, again, not proud, true confessions. One day I was watching her very slowly turn a one bite item into 75 bites. She was just like little tiny mouse bites. And I kind of lost my marbles and I was like, it's one bite! And I shoved them in her mouth. So mean. And I was just like, ah! And I walked away. And my husband's like, why is she crying? And I was like, because I made her take one bite as one bite. I can't handle it. Also, when my son is getting out of the car, I don't have anywhere to be. This is where it happens. It is in my driveway where the only thing I need to do is go inside of my house. I'm not in a rush, folks. I'm not trying to put out a fire. I don't have to use the bathroom urgently. I just don't want to stand in my driveway anymore. And my son is just like, walks, because he's all the way in the back of the van and he walks to the middle of the van. Stands there and thinks about a couple of things. And then he stands to like the precipice of the van. And just looks at the world. Meanwhile, my daughter, who is competitive, is like, I'm gonna be the fastest. And she jumps out of the car and I'm like, yes. But like, my son has no competitive spirit. And I get this, because I have no competitive spirit. If I was like, it's a race, he'd be like, she can have it. It's fine. So he just stands there, and I'm just like, come on! And, like, I can't handle it. And I've, like, grabbed him before and put him on the ground and slammed the door, and he's like, why did you grab me? And it's like, I cannot. It impacts my emotions and actions. I am angry at you for keeping me from being inside of my house. Why? But it is not that, right? It's not that thing. It's because I didn't sleep the night before because I stayed up for three nights watching Stranger Things, because I haven't eaten my own hot meal, because I'm having trouble paying bills because of all of the things. It impacts our emotions. It impacts our actions. We become irritable or depressed. We experience anxiety or panic. We stress out over things that may be of little significance, like getting out of a car. Some of us may become physically ill or withdraw and isolate ourselves. And you know what? I think Elijah is such a good example of this. He panicked. He panicked and he ran away. He panicked and he isolated himself. I am overwhelmed, and so I am done. But overwhelm also inhibits our ability to deal with overwhelm. We're too overcome by these emotions and this stacking list of things that we just get on this like crazy merry-go-round of overwhelm. And we don't want to talk to anyone else about it necessarily, so we just keep doing the same thing. I think most of you know what I'm talking about when you say, like, in that very early part of motherhood when you bring your baby home, whether it's your newborn or you have an adopted child and you're just like in the throes of like, I just became a mom and I have a lot of tasks to do that I did not previously have, and they're a lot, they're overwhelming. For me, when I brought the twins home, people kept asking me like, oh my gosh, you're nursing your twins? How do you keep doing that? I don't have a thought about it. Somebody cries and I just feed them. Somebody cries and I'm just like a robot. Not making good choices for myself. And you just get things done. And because things get done, we don't often realize that we're overwhelmed. I remember getting together with a girlfriend, a MOPS group friend, and she was explaining to us some issues that she was having with her kids sleeping. And her initial request was, if you guys could just pray that my daughter would start napping. And we're like, okay, I mean, a nap per request is a legitimate issue. And then she starts explaining, she has these two other kids and they live in a two-bedroom house, like how the sleep situation of who sleeps where and when they sleep. And we came to realize that like nobody was napping and nobody had slept through the night for over a year. And we were like, No, you need a grown-up to say red alert. You're on a crazy merry-go-round. Because what it was is like some kid would just be awake and she'd be like, okay, you're awake, and would just do the things for the kid, and okay, this kid doesn't want to be around this kid. And she was just going through motions, and I could see like as she was explaining to us all the layers of the issue that she was like, this is not sound as simple as it did in my head. It sounds like there's a lot of things going on that are keeping me from ever being alone or sleeping, ever. And I don't know how four of us were like, I'm gonna take your kids tomorrow. Like, I'm gonna take your two older kids, that baby needs to nap, you're going to also sleep. Like these are some, but you need somebody else that isn't in the fog of the emotion and isn't dealing with the same stack of overwhelm to look at it from overhead and tell you what kind of crazy you're living in. Because when you're in the middle of it, you don't see all of it. You're just like, especially as women, our arms just keep moving, our life just keeps going, and then all of a sudden somebody's like, that's too many things. You need to stop doing that. And we try and solve it with the wrong things. I find this with myself all the time. I'm like telling people how tired I am and I have no time to myself. But like every time I have a spare minute, I'm just like on Facebook. It's like, or I have like the kids actually went to sleep at a good time and I'm just downstairs, you know, binge watching Stranger Things or something else. And then I'm up to 1 o'clock in the morning. That was a poor choice on my part. That didn't like help me to be a better person, really. But I need somebody outside of it to help me make a plan to rejuvenate myself and get out of the overwhelm. I want to give you a couple of words of encouragement and instruction and then help you to see how we can deal with this more effectively. First of all, we all need to just agree, overwhelm is part of being human. I think as women, one of the things we do is we feel guilty for being overwhelmed. We feel a lack of self-worth for being overwhelmed, like we should be able to handle it all. Even if you don't buy into the fact that you can have it all, there's this thing out there that you can have it all and you can do it all, and I think we should all respectfully decline. I will not have it all. I will not do it all. Being overwhelmed is part of being human. We were created with limitations in the Garden of Eden. We were not created as God. We were not created with his capacity. We were not created eternal. We were created to sleep and eat. My son is very sad about this. When I put him to sleep, every once in a while he'll go, "I wish I was nocturnal." And I was like, "Then you would sleep during the day. That doesn't mean what you think it means." We were created to need to slow down. This is our limitation. It is part of being human. But also, overwhelm is what drives us toward God. In the same way that when my kids feel hunger pangs, they are hungry and they ask me for food. Our overwhelm should be a signal of our emptiness and lacking, not to make us feel bad about ourselves, to remind us that we need God to fill in the gaps. It's not a reminder of how incapable you are, it's a reminder of how capable he is. Overwhelm drives us to God. Those are the two words of encouragement, but also, overwhelm is often my fault. I have to own up to the fact that I make it a lot worse. I say yes to too many things. I'm trying to be too many things to too many people. I don't want to hurt people's feelings. I want to accomplish too many things. I strive for things that are going to make me feel better about myself that I don't need to be doing. Or I don't ask for help or share my struggles. This is one of the ways we really make it bad for ourselves, is we don't accept help. How many people here don't have a problem helping people but have a problem accepting help? Yes. And I'm going to tell you that that's part of our overwhelm. That's how we make it worse for ourselves. Because we're not inviting other people into our struggle. We're trying to tackle it all by ourselves. And there's all kinds of things we do in our head to convince ourselves we shouldn't ask for help. That we don't want to be a burden, that they have other things going on in their lives, that, you know, that it, and there's some self-worth issues going on in there. There's a lot of stuff. But what it boils down to is God instructed us to love one another as Christ loved us. It's a reciprocal exchange. The math doesn't work out if all of us are happy to help and no one is happy to be helped. And there is also a pride that comes along with only ever helping and never accepting help in humility. We need to stop making it too difficult for ourselves. Invite other people to help you. And it doesn't have to be something huge. The thing is, we only think of the huge things. We only think like, well, there's water coming out of my ceiling. I'm going to call somebody to clean up my whole house and like patch up the ceiling. Like, no, it doesn't have to be something huge. I texted two of my girlfriends. One of them offered to come over and just walk my kids down to the park for an hour so that they weren't in my hair. And the other one wanted to bring me a latte. Yes, please. Sometimes it's just something so small. It is something so small. I've gotten into the habit when I'm at Target that I will text like probably 5 or 6 of my girlfriends and say, "I'm already at Target. I feel like a rock star. I brought 3 children to Target. I am accomplishing big things with my life. I don't want you to have to worry about getting all 3 of your children to Target. What do you need?" And everybody needs something at Target. Don't tell me like, "Oh, nothing really. I'm going to get you something at Target or Trader Joe's or wherever you shop. Let me bring you the 3 things so you don't have to load all of your people up and get into the thing." And like, you know, deal with them, to putting stuff in the cart and whatever. Just let somebody pick you up three things. I won't even look at you. I'll throw your stuff out the window. It's fine. I had a girlfriend over one time and we had a laundry play date. I didn't put her to work. Don't worry. Like, I wasn't like, I'm glad you're here. I've got stuff for you to do. Like, handed her. We sat in my closet and we folded clothes while our kids, the three daughters, took a bath. Did I get a ton more laundry done? No. But you know what? It was way less overwhelming because I had like a comrade in arms. And her daughter had something to do and we had a good chat. She folded my husband's underwear. She saw like my holy pajamas that I should probably get rid of. But it was fine. We need to bring each other into these struggles and not only think of huge things that we could do for each other, but small things to invite each other into our overwhelm. So how would Jesus deal with this? Because Jesus deals with overwhelm a lot better than Elijah does, let me tell you. So Jesus was overwhelmed like we were, like we are. Jesus accepted his limitations. He accepted the limitations that were placed on him as a man, because he did live fully human. He accepted the limitations that were put on his life. When he had to feed the 5,000, he had a lot going on in his life. There were 5,000 people waiting to be fed. Sometimes I feel like I have 5,000 children and there's only three of them. And it stresses me out just to feed them for one day. Because it's like, are you still hungry? I'm so hungry. The number of times somebody says, I'm so hungry to me. If you say it again, I'm gonna lose it. And there were 5,000 people looking at Jesus, I am so hungry. And I go into my pantry and I look around and I'm like, I don't know, I have a can of pumpkin. Which I don't know what I thought I was going to do with that. Jesus had 5 loaves and 2 fish and he fed the 5,000. And you know what? He sent them away and he went up on a mountain to pray. Because God tasked him with feeding the 5,000. And then he was released and went up on the mountain to pray. Elijah didn't do this. Elijah didn't accept his limitations. He had to be reminded. Because where we pick up the story with Elijah, he's under the broom tree, ready to die. And do you know what happens? All at once, an angel touched Elijah and says, "Get up and eat." He looks around, and there by his head was some bread and a jar of water, and he ate and drank, and then he lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came back a second time, touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you." And he got up and ate and drank again. And strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights to the mountain of God. We are so mean to ourselves. We see all of the things that need to be done, and we decide we need to do all of them in a row. And we don't let ourselves stop. We don't accept our limitations. My kids, I'm sure that you've had this happen, have thrown epic tantrums. And I'm looking at them and I know, if I could just get you to eat a banana and take a nap, this would go away. Your life problems would be solved. And I think God looks at me the same way. I'm under things under my bed and I'm texting in tears to my husband, and God's like, if you had eaten a banana and gone to sleep at a regular time, this would not be a problem. We need to accept our limitations, ladies. We need to stop thinking we are the only ones that can do everything. We need to allow people into our lives to help us, and not just your mom, your best friend, your sister, your husband. You need to invite other people sitting at your table with you. Because we call on those people, and then when they don't show up, we're just like. I once was speaking at a MOPS, And I was talking to some ladies later, and they were at a table, and they were laughing to each other. And I was like, what happened? And they said, we're your neighbors. We live across the street from each other. And both of us realized that this week, we both texted our husbands that they had to come home early because we couldn't handle it anymore. And it didn't even occur to us to go across the street. Across the street. I can't handle this anymore. Can we take all of the people we can't handle and put them in your backyard and have a cup of coffee together? We need to rewire our brains to accept that we cannot be thin and young with $1 million and a clean car and a beautiful house and well-behaved children and be the best wife and the best mom and the best sister with the best, most Pinterest perfect holiday ever. We cannot do all of the things. Accept your limitations. One of the things I love to say when I come across something that I'm not good at, because here's what happens, we do. We compliment each other, but kind of in a way that puts ourselves down, like, your house is so beautiful. And what that actually means is, my house is so ugly. It's like the opposite of a backhanded compliment. It's like I slap myself in the face. Do you know what I like to say? I like to say, I'm good at enough things. I'm good at enough things. You have a beautiful house. Yay, you. I'm good at enough things. My kids know all the words to the Hamilton musical. That's what I'm prioritizing. I don't know. I did that instead of cleaning my bathroom, I guess. We also need to listen to the Father and listen to only the Father. We get a lot of words in our heads. The media, our moms, cultural expectations, comparison that we see from other people. And we don't want to let people down, and so we get a lot of words in our heads of what we're supposed to do. And the only one that's supposed to tell us what we're supposed to do is God. Jesus lived here for 33 years here on earth. He only had 3 years of ministry. He waited 30 years until God told him to start. And if you think about it, he didn't heal every single person that landed, that lived on the earth at that time. He healed specific people that God instructed him to heal. He didn't feed every single person that lived on the earth. He fed the 5,000. He didn't preach to every single person. If there was anyone ever created that could say, I got this, and with a word could have healed every person that lived on that earth, it would have been Jesus. But he didn't, because it was not part of God's plan. We need to stop listening to what other people think a homemaker is, a wife is, a mom is, a woman is, and listen just to what God says you are supposed to be. When I had my twins, I had decided that I was going to need some help because I struggled with depression. I didn't want my postpartum depression to be terrible. I wanted to make sure that I was taking care of myself and my family. So I asked some people, you know, who had had twins and multiples previously, if you had had help, or if you could have had help, what would have been most helpful to you? Would it have been somebody coming at night to help take care of them overnight? Would it have been somebody to take your older kid away? What? And overwhelmingly, people said, you can do it. Which they all meant as encouragement, right? We mean to encourage each other. You can do it. You can do it. But we need to realize you can do what God instructed you to do. And sometimes what he instructs you to do is to let people help you. Sometimes what he instructs you to do is to delegate to other people. Did you know just before the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus had sent his disciples out to heal people and drive out demons? He didn't do all that business himself. Sometimes what God has for you to do is a lot less than what everybody thinks you're supposed to do. And lastly, we need to stop staring at the waves. We need to stop staring at the waves. When Elijah goes those 40 days and he travels to the mountain of God, he goes up there and the Lord says, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. And Elijah gets to experience God in a really powerful way. But just before that, God asks him, you know, Elijah, what are you doing here? And Elijah lists all of these things. He says, I have been a servant of God. I have done everything that you have said. I have defeated the 450 prophets of Baal, and I have killed all of them, and now Jezebel still wants to kill me. He is totally staring at all of the problems in his life. And we do that. And you know what we do? I totally do this. I do that, and I think it's making a to-do list. And I think it's like being an effective planner. I go out and I get myself a really cute planner because that is the first step to holiness. And probably Erin Condren or something like that. And I order like a really nice one and I get really good pens because that is important. Before you don't get a crappy pen. Get upgrade from Papermate, my friends. And I start making a list and I'm going to tackle all of the things. I'm going to make sure I'm scheduling friend time. I'm going to be a good friend. I'm going to make sure I'm going to wake up at 5:30 in the morning and spend time with Jesus. And I'm going to have all of these. And now with my new schedule and my new plan, I am going to never be overwhelmed because it is in a book and it is planned with pretty pens. We think being organized is the same, is going to give us the same results as trusting God. And it's not. I am so guilty of this. I am so guilty of this. So Elijah, he just lists all of these problems to God. And God doesn't respond. We would love God to respond if we just cried out to him. And I pray to God and I cry out to him and I tell him all the things that I have on my plate. And I would love for him to respond, okay, Marie, item one. This is how we're going to tackle these problems one by one. But what God does for Elijah is he says, he tells him to go stand on the mountain and experience his presence. And a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave because that was the Lord. God doesn't give us an answer to every single issue that we come up with. He gives us himself, his presence, knowing him more deeply because that is always the answer. If we go back to the story of Jesus, he's just fed the 5,000. He has dismissed them, accepting his own limitations, listening to what only God had for him to do. He goes up to the mountain to pray, and he sends his disciples out in a boat onto the water, and a storm comes. And this storm threatens to capsize the boat, and Jesus comes out walking on the water. Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." "Lord, if it is you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. And then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink and cried out, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" I am constantly reminded when I struggle with overwhelm, and I continue to, that I think most of the time when I'm struggling, it is a reminder of my lack of trust in God. I feel overwhelmed because I don't trust him to show up when he said he was going to show up. I don't trust that he's going to fill in the gaps. And I see all these waves, and I start to make a list of all the waves, like I'm going to tackle them one by one, and then I realize I can't do this. I'm one person. I am incapable of dealing with these waves. And it drives me to feeling bad about myself, to feeling small and incapable, instead of trusting God. Because the truth is, our overwhelm is bigger than us. It's supposed to remind us we're small, and supposed to remind us how big He is. We need to accept our limitations and stop listening to the rest of the world. And we need to look at our overwhelm as a blessing that reminds us to lean into God, because nothing is bigger than He is. I'd like to pray for us before we go. God, thank you so much for this time this morning, where we can come in this community. What a gift it is to be around other women in the same station in life that have young children that are just trying to make it every day, God. I pray that today, as we think about what overwhelms us, that we stop focusing on the one thing, that you can help us to realize there are so many things stacking up. And not so that we feel bad about ourselves or a lack of worth or feel like we are falling short in a way that makes us less than, but that you would remind us that we need you. Not that we're not as good as someone else, but that we have a good God. Please, God, help us to be vulnerable with our friends here today. Help these women to allow one another to sit with each other in this vulnerability and in dealing with our overwhelm. I pray that at these tables that people would begin to share what is stacking up in their lives. What is threatening to overwhelm them, overtake them, and that they would begin to step into one another's lives as helpers, as healers, and that these shortcomings we all experience would be, again, a reminder of how you never fall short, you never fail us. You are bigger and stronger than anything we will come into contact with. Thank you for your goodness and your faithfulness. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it. Thank you. I think that there are email sign-up sheets if anybody yes. wants to sign up for my email list. And I send out emails once a week and some video and audio teaching if you guys want any of that. And Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.